Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. Hello. Coming to you live. To hard drive. I don't know.
I was like, I don't know where he's going with this, but...
We're technically in the same place we always are.
Yeah. Those of you who are watching the live stream right now, you will notice that, yes, indeed, Jocelyn's webcam is still broken.
Wait, it was broken?
Yeah.
Was it broken last week?
Did I tell you that? Well, I tried to use a backup one last week, and it didn't work very well, so I just gave up. I have to buy a new one. Haven't had the time or the money, so therefore, yes, the webcam is still broken.
And time is money, so...
What?
It was a Warcraft reference.
What does that have to do with
anything?
It's
a Warcraft reference.
So... Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Ryan, how has your week been? I hear that you want to talk about some reading materials.
Yes. You know, I think we've had, you know, probably closer to when Nerdtacular happened, we had the discussion, what do you play on the airplane when you fly places? So I figured we've discussed Warcraft books in the past, and I have two, and I'm going to put it to a poll, mainly to you, because our chat room has been very quiet tonight, because we just started. But I have these two books. I have Beyond the Dark Portal, which is a sequel. I've read the first one, like, probably, like, 6 years ago when it first came out.
Right. And so the first one is The Tides of Darkness?
Yeah, which is essentially Warcraft 2, right?
Yes.
And then I have Arthas. These are the two that I have not read yet, but for some reason own two Warcraft books.
So Beyond the Dark Portal, I am halfway through right now.
Oh.
It is... fantastic. I think, have you read Rise of the Horde?
That's the other thing too, is it's hard to tell if I've read them, because half my book collection is at my parents still, and I'm pretty sure I've read it. Up until Rise of Tides or Tides of Darkness or
Tides
whatever.
Tides of Darkness. Yeah. Rise of the Horde.
Cycle of Hatred. Something of something. Insert Warcraft title here. No, I think Tides of Darkness was the last one that I read in order of release, and then after that I kind of fell off the reading wagon, probably due to the fact that Skyward Sword came out, and it's like, man, this is enough reading to last me for the rest of my life.
Okay, so if Tides of Darkness is the last one you read, Beyond the Dark Portal is chronologically the next one that you would read, like, chronologically in terms of lore. Mm-hmm. And then, so you'd read Beyond the Dark Portal, and then the Arthas book. At least that's what I understand. I don't have my list right here. It's in my purse, because I may or may not carry my chronological WoW lore.
Just in case, like, the crazy guy on the bus
all the time.
needs to be replaced by the crazy girl with the timeline in her purse.
It actually has to do with if I ever finish a book while I'm commuting, I can go to the library and get the next one, and I'll know exactly which one it is that I need.
You know who you remind me of?
Warcraft books, okay? There's a lot of them.
And there's, like, split timelines and stuff, so I just imagine you, if you ever got to, like, a chalkboard, you just turn into, like, Doc Brown. Marty! They go back in time 10,000 years to save your kids, Marty! Illidan! Buh! I just imagine that would happen, so just please stay away from all schools. Because
no chalkboards for me?
Yeah, because, well, I mean, you don't want to act like that around a school for many reasons, but trust me. No, okay, so, Beyond the Dark Portal, it is. As much as I enjoy Arthas and feel as though... I was going to make a joke about the Rise of the Lich King book reminding me of home, but as far as I know, it doesn't take place in Northrend, right?
No.
Because Northrend's Canada, Jocelyn.
Oh, I see.
I'm
getting all these mixed metaphors because I've heard it called Northrend, I've heard it called Beyond the Wall from Game of Thrones. Like, there's just so many winter references that have to do with Canada and fantasy, so I get confused.
It's fine. That's probably why I didn't tweet that joke in the end of it, because I didn't feel like explaining it.
Beyond the Dark Portal, it's really good so far. I'm enjoying it. It's a little bit... Well, it's partially written by Christy Golden, who I think is the best author in terms of the WoW titles.
Right.
So... And I also did enjoy the Tides of Darkness, which I believe was written by the other writer, Aaron something?
Aaron Rosenberg.
Rosenberg, yeah. So the two of them together write a really solid novel, and it's quite long, longer than I kind of realized at first, because all the paperbacks are fairly close to the same size, obviously not including the archives. And they're, that one is just, it's taking me a long time to get through, and I was kind of thinking, like, oh, maybe I'm reading this really slowly or something. I'm like, no, I'm on page 300, and I'm only halfway through.
Yeah, there's a lot of pages.
Deceiving.
All right, well, I will take that. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of thinking I probably won't crack it open. I'm told that on this resort that you go to, you can, like, sit down and read books without being hassled. So that's what I might do, because I'm not a swimmer.
Because normally on vacation, if they catch you with a book, they steal it, throw it in the ocean, and replace it with a margarita.
You're doing it wrong. You can't drink that book. Try drinking it. I dare you. Drink it. And he puts a gun to your head. And it's like, okay. So many paper cuts. Margarita gave me so many few. All right. Well, great. That was a longer conversation. That was a much more interesting conversation than I was expecting. So Beyond the Dark Portal it is. I will report back.
And then, we'll probably both finish around the same time, and it'll be fabulous. It could be like a book club.
You know what? Oh.
I wish you could see my face right now.
We should do a Gamers In book club.
That'd be amazing.
Seriously, it makes the most sense. Some of the best novels that come out, according to me, and probably only me, are video game-based novels.
Exactly.
I could make you do Road to Halo 4 again, but in novel editions. Oh, I love this idea.
I hate this idea. Because you'll probably make me read Halo novels, at which point I will want to jump in front of the bus instead of getting on it.
Yeah.
It's like I could get on the bus and read, or I could jump in front of it and save myself from Halo.
They're not as good as the games, but there are Halo books, and they quickly declined in quality. But the Warcraft books
I'm finding the Warcraft books are getting better and better and better, and actually can't wait to get to the Arthas one, because that is one big, huge chunk of lore that, you know, he's kind of poked his head in, because he's a kid right now in Tides of Darkness, and then Beyond the Dark Portal, he's like kind of around 12-ish. So, you know, he pokes his head in, and I'm just like, oh my god, murder that child, he's going to become the Lich King! Kill, kill, kill!
Okay, I'm going to make a sweeping declaration sort of right now. You're reading the Warcraft books, you're pretty serious about it. I might get back on the train once I read the airplane, once I get through this Beyond the Dark Portal book. There's a new one coming out probably around the fall or late summer.
Mm-hmm.
But how many books back are we? Because I assume...
Oh, many.
Yeah.
Many.
I assume you're not going to want to jump.
If you've been reading them in order of release, then you might have less to read than me.
Oh, yeah, I've been reading... You're still not in the War of the Ancients trilogy?
No, I read War of the Ancients, because even though they're characters traveling back in time, the majority of the book happens 10,000 years ago, so those were the first ones that I read. So I didn't know who Crassus and Ronan were in the context of Warcraft now, but I wanted to read all about the dragons and everything else, like the past and the first coming of the Burning Legion and all of that kind of stuff. So I read War of the Ancients first.
Okay.
And then now I'm working my way through Warcraft 2. Although, what is Warcraft? Like, because you said, not Beyond the Dark Portal, Tides of Darkness, you said, was Warcraft 2. So if Tides of Darkness is Warcraft 2, what was just Warcraft?
I don't think they did a novelization for Warcraft. They kind of like tiptoed around it with a lot of the novels. Like there's Lords of the Clan, which I think is like a thrall book, like before Warcraft 2, I think. It's been a while. I don't think they literally cover the events of Warcraft.
Yeah, I haven't actually read the Thrall one yet, because my chronological lore list says that comes later. I've read the Last Guardian, which is about the creation of, or like about the guy that created the Dark Portal and brought the orcs in.
So that would be Warcraft 1 era.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's how Warcraft 1 starts, basically.
Okay. So then, The Last Guardian is Warcraft 1. Got it. Okay. Yep. I'm on board.
Yeah, Warcraft 1 is an older game, so the story, and I remember the devs saying this, and that's kind of why they did the novels, is that the story in the game isn't too complex, and also they had a Horde wins ending and a human wins ending, and I think they ditched that model with Warcraft 2, where you started just played both sides and there was a single storyline.
Right.
But yeah, no, I was going to suggest that with the new one, I think it's like something about prison. It's like Oz, except with the guy who's in prison. What's his name?
You're going to have to at least give me a race.
The orc. The guy who's in prison, the orc.
Garrosh?
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's about that guy, except he's in prison.
It's about that guy. You know that guy? He was only like war chief for like, you know, a whole two expansions. No big deal.
But anyways, I was going to suggest that we do a book club of that. If we're at the point where we're at the point where we're reading it, but I think we're probably like I'm at least five novels behind, and if it took me 5 or 6 years to get back to this one, then chances of me finishing it.
I have 3 just in the Warcraft archive that I haven't read yet. So I read Last Guardian, and then Last Guardian led into Tides of Darkness. So then I think I have another one to read after Beyond the Dark Portal, and then I have the Arthas book. I think that chronologically there's a book that comes between Arthas and the Dark
like
Portal.
Stormrange, then there's the troll one, and then there's like Jaina. So that's 3 right there.
Yeah, but those all happen later.
Yeah, but those are like chronological order before the one that's coming out, because the one that's coming out is essentially the events between Cataclysm and Draenor.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So it's weird. Like, they've kind of, I didn't mean for this to come a topic, but they've kind of, and I think we've
discussed. We're flipping the whole show on its head right now. We are doing topic before what we're playing. What is going on?
I think that they've really ramped up production on those books. Like, they used to be, like, 1 every couple of years, and now it's, like, 3 a year.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Well,
I really think that it has a lot to do with new players coming to Warcraft. Yeah. Is, you know, like, now that World of Warcraft has been out so long, all of these other titles, like, you can't even find Warcraft or Warcraft 2 anymore. Warcraft 3 is hard enough to get your hands on, because I've been trying to find a copy for a long time now.
Oh, you can't find the battle chest?
No. And even if you find the battle chest, then it's like, it may or may not run on your system, you know? Like, it's a really, really old game now. So I can see them trying to tell some of these stories to people that are picking it up, and especially with this free level 90 character, all the refer a friend and the Scroll of Resurrection, all these kind of things that they've put into the World of Warcraft in order to bring in new people or bring back people or whatever, they're going to have some really big holes in their knowledge. And a great way to get the information across is to tell these stories that were told in the game through novels, because they're quite accessible. The reading level isn't that crazy.
No.
They're entertaining, but you can get through them fairly quickly. So, I mean, like, I just started reading everything probably late fall, and I've already devoured War of the Ancients, Rise of the Horde, Tides of Darkness, Cycle of Hatred, which I read out of order by accident. I'm halfway through Beyond the Dark Portal. Yeah, like, I mean, I've gone through probably 6 or 8 books just in the last couple of months. Oh, Last Guardian, I totally even forgot to mention. So yeah, like probably 6 or 8 books in 3-ish months. And it's really, really easy to get through all of this content and understand what's going on in the lore. So I think that they've made a really good choice to try to fill in some of those holes for people who may not have been with the franchise for the last, 20 years?
Yeah. 20
years of Warcraft?
20 years.
Because it's going to be 10 years of the World of Warcraft November.
Yeah, it was 10 years when WoW came out, and now, yeah, it'll be 20 in
Yeah, so
in
it'll
November.
Be 20 years of Warcraft. So, I mean, if you no longer have the technology to play the games, you've got to tell your stories somehow, so
books will never go away. That's true.
Yes.
They are the vinyl of mediums for books.
Wouldn't vinyl be the vinyl of mediums?
So what did you play this week, Jocelyn?
I played a virus named Tom, which I swear to God, I have not had that much fun in an indie game, I think, ever.
Well, okay, whoa. Can I stop you there? Why would you name your virus Tom? I mean, Tom Merritt is a pretty good guy. Like, I doubt he would infect people willingly.
Well, you never know. You never know. I don't necessarily know if Tom is infecting things willingly. I think he was created by a mad scientist who has his values a little bit askew.
It's not Tom's fault?
It's not Tom's fault.
Okay. Well, sorry, Tom. I didn't mean to drag you into this. I guess it's not your fault. So what's the game about?
It's a title I've had for quite a while now. It's $10 on Steam, and I bought it at some point in some sale. And so this last week, I was sitting in front of the computer, and I was like, okay, I need to play something for Gamersin. I have a library that is now over 100 games. But I'm just like, I don't even know what I'm going to do here. Like, these are things I've never touched. Some of them have been gifts. Like, some of them I've tried and hated. So I was just like, okay, I'm just going to start at the top with A. And that happened to be a virus named Tom.
That's crazy.
Best decision ever. Because seriously, it's like an action puzzler. Do you remember those, I think it was like Windows maybe 95, maybe before that had like the pipe game where you had to click on the spot and then it would have the pipes and the slime would go through and you had to make the slime go from one end of the pipe to the other.
Do you remember
that game? Okay, so it's similar in that you have to infect. Basically, there is a scientist who helps this city build the city of the future, so everything is like robotic, and then they say, hey, Mr. Scientist, thanks for inventing the city of the future, we don't need you anymore, and they fire him, and then he goes insane and creates a virus to infect all of the robots in the city of the future. So you go through as the virus and you have to spread the virus through the circuitry of the robots. And it is so much fun. You have to, like, use a controller, first of all, which I thought was great. And they say right off the start, because it is a PC game, they're like, there's a little icon of, like, a mouse and keyboard. And then they're like, okay. And then there's an like an icon of a controller. And they're like, better. Like, all right, sweet. So I plugged in the controller, and it's like, you have to move, you have to hold the A button and then, like, move the left stick and turn the sections of the pipe to allow the virus to go through all the circuitry. And each puzzle adds a new level of complexity. So, like, there's drones that try to destroy the virus. Sometimes there's encryptions, which means that you can't actually see the circuitry. You just have to kind of move things around. You can put glitches in, and if the drones run into glitches, then they explode. And, like, there's just all of these really cool different mechanics within this puzzle game. So there's, like, it's a mix of puzzles, which are very, very, very challenging, and then action, because you have to move and switch and move really, really quickly, because it's also kind of timed. You have to do it within a certain amount of time because it takes energy to keep the virus running. If you get hit by an antivirus drone, you lose a whole bunch of energy. So it's like almost like a balance of like a life and time sort of thing. It's really cool. It's like they smooshed a whole bunch of things together into this really fun, really addictive, and it has the same sort of sense of humor as Portal. I mean, like, I was sitting here and I was playing away. It was like, I can't remember if it was Tuesday or Wednesday night. I'm sitting here, I'm playing. And then there were times I was actually like laughing out loud. And Joel's like, what the hell are you doing? I'm like, nothing. Just playing a game. Don't mind me. And he was just like, wow, weird. So anyways, a virus named Tom. Super fun. I think I've made it through 2.5, like, not worlds, but, like, the first thing you have to infect is a dog, and then so the robot dog has all these different parts, and then the next thing is a teleporter, and the teleporter has all these different parts. So I made it through the dog, through the teleporter, and into the moving sidewalk. So I'm, like, 2.5. I am. So it's doable, it's challenging, and it's frustrating at times, but not frustrating in a throw a controller way.
Is this a type of game that would work well on an iPad? Because it certainly looks, just from the screenshots, that it could work on an iPad.
It would absolutely be fine on an iPad. It might actually be easier, because the one thing I did feel is that sometimes the controller mechanics were a little bit rough. Like, I would think that I was doing something, but I'd push something the wrong way, or, like, I'd grab a corner and I'd push down, but in order to spin it once, you'd have to go down and over at the same time. And right. It was just, you know, some of the mechanics were a little janky, that if you had your finger, it would be easier to say, like, spin this one, you know? So I can see how it would be easier on an iPad. I don't necessarily know if they want to make it easier, but it was a lot of fun and very challenging, which is nice. And it does have multiplayer. I don't know of anyone else who actually owns it who's on my Steam list, but it does have multiplayer, and you can do either co-op, and there's a whole bunch of different co-op challenges, or you can do versus, and again, there's a whole bunch of different versus challenges, which is what I really liked, that it's not just like each puzzle is different sections moved around that, like, but the same general mechanic. It's like every single time you get a new puzzle, there's a new mechanic added. So whether that's like you're lower on energy and you have to try to steal energy from the drones, or you can't see, like I mentioned, the encryption thing, you can't actually see the puzzle pieces as you're trying to move them around, you know, like every single time it's something different, and it looks the same in the multiplayer. Like every single multiplayer challenge is different, and there's different ones for co-op versus, you know, versus mode. So It seems like a really robust game. And again, it's a $10 indie title. And normally I'm not a big indie person. It's just not, the games are usually either too simplistic or too hardcore PC gamer for me. So this is a really nice balance, I felt.
Cool. So what's next then, if you're going alphabetically?
Well, I was going alphabetically on Tuesday. I don't know if I'll keep doing that.
Well, Tuesday is an alphabetical thing. I got it. Never mind. Well, you should play Tomb Raider. So if you're not going to go alphabetically, you should go by level.
I was looking for something. The thing that is I find really daunting about, well, I'm going to have to play a lot of Assassin's Creed this weekend, but titles like Assassin's Creed and Tomb Raider and all the rest of it is that I know that they're big games, and sometimes, which is why I'm so drawn to Hearthstone, I just want to play for half an hour, 45 minutes. And you can't do that with some of these big AAA titles, you know? You sit down, if you only have half an hour to play, you only just start to get going on something, and then you have to leave. So, I don't know, like, sometimes these little indie darlings, like, it's the same sort of thing as Super Meat Boy, you know?
Yeah.
You can pick it up, play a couple of levels, and there are very discrete stopping points, whereas some of the open world stuff there just isn't.
I found that with Assassin's Creed, I was running into that issue where I'd go in and I'd be sailing and I'd find like a bunch of ships and take them over and be like, wait a minute, I started playing this so I could do a mission and I'm already been playing for an hour. Well, now I have to do a mission, so now it's an extra hour on top of that. Mm-hmm. I'm having fun the entire time, but when you have sort of a budget of, you know, an hour to play, it's kind of tough to say, I don't feel like I'll leave that experience feeling like I accomplished something, so I'm going to play a smaller game. Mm-hmm. Totally understand that that mentality. Like I've done that in the past where I'll go down my Steam list like, oh, here's a small game I haven't touched yet, and you know, go at it.
And that's like another thing that I've kind of been struggling with lately is that like where I'm working, I'm back to Monday to Friday now, and working, you know, usually my days run about 9 hours and it's 9 straight hours. I'm only supposed to work 7, but they're 9 straight hours of sitting at the computer and then, you know, like sitting on the commute, and then I get home and then I sit in front of the computer again, which is like one thing I'm really struggling with is that a lot of the things that I've been playing are on PC. So that was actually one of the really great things about Gamers in Game Night on Thursday was the ability to actually sit on the couch and play Mass Effect 3 and not worry about, you know, being in front of the computer and sitting, and, you know, I'm still sitting, but there's a difference between lounging on the couch and sitting in front of a computer at a desk. So Mass Effect 3 was so much fun.
Yeah,
it always is. We keep coming back to that, but man, was it fun.
You know, gamers and fans, just stick with us, because eventually it'll come full circle and the next Mass Effect game will come out, and then Gamers in Game Night will be something that is new. But I joke, but I had a blast. And we did about, there's about 2 hours of footage if you go to our Twitch page. I hesitate to say it, but I'm going to try to go through it. I know there are some clips in there that are worth snipping out. Maybe we'll do like a Gamers in TSN thing and we'll have the highlights, the top 10. GIS Gamers down, clip number 10.
Okay.
GIS Gamers down, clip number 9. Not
always down. Oh, no. Screw you right in your stupid face.
I believe there was singing involved last night. I can't remember.
It was a really good time. We had our good friend Val, who's been a listener of the Gamers in pretty much, I think, since we started. She's been around a really long time. So Val jumped on and played some Mass Effect with us. And man, she's so much better. I'm so bad.
we did good. We not to dredge on the old Mass Effect, but we got out of a silver match. And at the end there, which was surprising because we normally, it's like everyone was shaking in their boots when I suggested we kick it up to silver.
I'm quite comfortable down in bronze, and I'm not ashamed to admit that.
We had fun, except for that stupid cloud of death.
Well, and I also made the mistake of putting moisturizer on my hands before we started playing, and then my controller got all goopy, and then my fingers were all slippery. And I was like, oh, I make poor life choices.
See, that's not... We can't talk about moisturizer on this show, can we?
Why can't we?
I don't know.
It's just moisturizer. I have to moisturize my hands. It's Canada in the winter. It's very dry.
I feel you. I got some dryness
Screw
going
you.
On.
Whatever. What have you been playing other than Mass Effect?
I kicked in some DayZ. Some early access DayZ. Now... This is one of those titles alongside Rust that's been getting a lot of the early access love from journalists and gamers alike. And I played a little bit with Bob, my co-host on Zombies Ate My Podcast, and as sort of a, hey, let's give this a shot. Maybe we can get some video content out of this. And we played for a good hour, and there's probably only 5 minutes of footage that is probably usable, because the rest of it is just running around an empty map, running away from one zombie.
Really?
Literally, this is very early access, and I think this is why, and I'm not complaining because it's alpha, and I can see why it's alpha, because it is seriously a test bed, because you zone in, and the server could have been empty. The server said there was like 10, 15 people, but I only found Bob after 45 minutes of dying and wandering around. So
wait, you were only up against one zombie, and yet you died?
Because it's realistic, right? They'll come at you, and they'll be like, rawr, and they grab you, or they don't even grab you. See, that's the other thing, too, is that it's very minimal in the feedback you're given, and it feels a lot like the mod where... And I don't know if they're going to change this, but I kind of hope they do. It's not like when you look at a video of Dead Rising 3 and it's very animated and dynamic, the way zombies will grab you and bite into you. In this, they just kind of like... It's like Minecraft. You've seen the clips of Minecraft where the creeper will come up to you and do this, you know, and then you start bleeding. Well, it's essentially the same thing in DayZ. And by this, audio listeners, it looks like I'm vigorously milking a cow, you know? And Jocelyn can attest, it did look like that, right? Okay.
Yes, it did.
I'm not crazy.
No.
So the zombies will come up to you and just kind of like slash their arms at you, and then you'll start bleeding, and eventually you pass out and die.
Oh.
And again, like, I like the idea of it, and there's some great video clips out there of people playing this game, which one of my favorites is the whole point of the game, it's like player versus player, so you have to kind of watch who you approach and stuff. And there's this video of these two guys who have a lot of equipment. They're very well equipped, and they can, you know, protect themselves. So they'll find newbies or people who have, like, maybe played for a day and has got some stuff and say, okay, you move, you die, surrender. Then the guy surrenders and he says, okay, I'm going to let you go. I'll even give you some food for on your way, but you have to sing your national anthem. Yeah, and then these guys, he's like, what, are you serious? Like, yeah, that's the only way you're getting out of here alive. And then, like, this German guy starts singing the German national anthem. and it's moments like that that make this game feel like it's truly unique and interesting. But okay. Literally, the most fun I had last night was Bob and I eventually did meet up, and then we found a zombie, and then we basically punched it to death. And it was probably one of the worst zombie interaction ever caught on film, because it literally just looked like punching the zombie and running away and then accidentally punching each other. That game is very early access, and when they say that that you are helping test it, you really are helping to test it.
Okay, so around that whole helping to test it piece.
Sure.
Are you getting any sort of benefit to this at all? Like, if you pay, say, call it $10 for early access, does that mean that the future game is going to be $30 or $40 and you're getting, like, an insane amount of a discount for being such an early adopter? Or is it just strictly, like, it's going to cost you $20 now, we're going to sell it for $20 when it's done, you know, you just get to be basically pay for beta access, or alpha in this case?
I looked into this, and DayZ might be a little bit of a different scenario than Rust, but there's no written exclamation out there, explanation about whether or not you are paying less to get in early. Some early access games do the opposite, where they're charging more to get access to the beta so you can help test.
I can kind of see it both ways. I mean, I feel like in something like what sounds like this case in for DayZ, I mean, if you're going in and essentially testing their game right from the very beginning, that's the sort of thing that generally in the gaming industry would be a paid job. Like, a video game tester from alpha is usually paid. So I can see how they would say, okay, we're going to give you the game for cheap if you come in and help us test it.
Yeah.
And then I can also see the flip side of that with something like ESO, Elder Scrolls Online, where there is a huge demand for the game is pretty much finished, beta access is almost a chance to play the finished, polished game early, in which case I can see players paying a developer for that early access. Right. So I can see both sides of the argument, but I think that there's a big difference between a title like DayZ or Rust, and again, I haven't played Rust, so I don't know, but something like that versus something that is pretty much finished, polished, and done, and you're just stress testing.
Yeah, now, there's a, like, I guess when you look at another early access title we played, Goddess, like, that was a little farther along, had some mechanics, had some progression, had, you know, I wouldn't call it alpha, it was definitely beta. Like, DayZ and Rust are both alpha games, and I bet you in a year's time, when you look at the beta or even final release, it'll be very different from what we played, you know,
right,
this week.
So I feel like you should get some sort of something for that, you know? I don't know.
It's a double-edged sword. Like, say you give them a discount, and then they get access to the early, they get access to the alpha, but then you have people coming in saying, like, oh, this game looks interesting and it's actually pretty cheap. You know, I'll go in and play. And then it's like, this is broken. Mm-hmm. So by keeping the cost high, you keep the barrier a little higher and you get more serious players playing. And some people will pay to have access to a game early, even if it is an alpha state. Like, DayZ is a very popular title. And I'm sure in the case of Rust, the developers clearly state this is alpha. We want people who are seriously thinking about helping us test. So by having that price higher, I'm not saying it's high. I mean, it's only $20, but it's saying it's higher, you know, keeps the serious gamers coming around to smell the fence rather than, you know, hopping
smell
over
the
top.
Fence.
Well, dog analogy. Come on, keep up. but you know, I haven't played Rust yet, and I would think that Rust will go up in cost when it comes out. I think you're getting a discount. But that's just my assumption. There's nothing out there to back it up. DayZ, being an ARMA game, I could see being $50 when it releases. Now, again, I don't know for certain. And I don't think you should go out and pick it up just so you can get $20 off. Because essentially that's money in the bank for them if you're not going to play it in an alpha state.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. But it's definitely not for the lighthearted, because it was boring. You know, I was like, yeah. I'm just walking around. It's pretty, but you know, it definitely needs work. And I don't know. I'm looking forward to trying Rust, though. I hear good things.
Yeah. So I don't know if I've mentioned this. I know I mentioned it, I think, on Angry Chicken on Monday night, but guess what I bought?
What'd you buy?
I bought the collector's edition of Elder Scrolls Online.
Oh, you said that last week, didn't you?
Did I say that last week? I couldn't remember when I bought it.
Yeah, there was a map. There was a map discussion.
Oh, right. Yeah, damn it. I'm just so excited that I didn't know when I mentioned it and when I actually bought it. So I've been excited for a week now. So this is just an update. I still have it.
She did not cancel her pre-orders. Tune in next week and we'll find out if she canceled her pre-order. Back to you, Bob. No, it's good. You get a statue and a map and a little dog thing. The ability
to play any race in any alliance, which is going to be awesome for PvP. Yes,
that's so dumb that they've added that to the collector. We had that conversation last week too, I think.
Probably.
I don't know.
Sorry, guys. Sorry.
It's interesting.
I should read show notes or, you know, have a memory that lasts longer than 7 days.
Well, it doesn't help that we've been incredibly busy. Like, usually we have a plethora of games to discuss. I wanted to buy Tomb Raider on PS4, and I have yet to get around to it. And I probably won't. By the time I start playing games again, seriously, Second Son will be out, and I'll be... Mm. I won't even need Tomb Raider. So.
So, were you playing anything else this week before we move on?
I played a little bit of Donkey Kong Country on the 3DS, but that was more so just to be like, I want to play Donkey Kong before it comes out. It's coming out on the Wii U next Friday. Not next Friday.
Oh, cool.
The Friday after that. So when we have a show, because we're not going to have a show next week.
Oh, yeah, we should totally mention that. Mm-hmm. Next week, Ryan is actually going to be away on vacation, and our show actually falls on Valentine's Day. So we are not going to do a show next week because of, multiple reasons. I could have tried to get somebody to do something with me on Valentine's Day, but I figured that probably most of the people that I know in the podcasting community are in relationships or married or whatever the case may be. So I would probably either be very hard pressed to find somebody or possibly cause some kind of divorce. So
I don't even think we would have enabled. Well, we had discussed moving it to Saturday, but
yeah,
whatever.
We're just gonna skip it.
Hallmark, you win.
Yeah.
No, but by the time we do have a show on the 21st, the new Donkey Kong game will be out on Wii U again, ending what was only a 3-month drought. So that's not too bad.
That's not too bad.
But a year in, there shouldn't be a 3-month drought. Just saying. So I'll be playing that. So to get ready and also to kind of pick some games for the trip, I've been polishing off Donkey Kong Country. That game's so much fun. I love those games. You played on the Wii. You should see if you can pick up a used copy on the 3DS, because that game's fantastic.
I love Donkey Kong. On the Super Nintendo, those were some of my favorite titles. Mm. The Donkey Kong Country, and then the Diddy Kong one, and the one with him and Dixie, and, you know, like, it just, I love those titles. So
yeah, they're nostalgia ticklers, I guess, is what we like to call them on the old Gamers Inn.
Tickling nostalgia. The Donkey Kong Country Returns for the 3DS I've actually had in my hands a couple of times, and I've just been like, it's full price. I can never find a used copy. I'm just like, I could pay $40 or I could not. And I've always fallen down on the side of not, and I think that maybe I need to change that. Well, or just keep my eyes open for a used copy.
I'm surprised it's a year old, almost. I'm surprised it's not... can't find it.
I think that bodes well for it. I mean, if you saw 3 or 4 used copies in every EB, then it would be like, oh, well, why is everyone returning this game? But, I mean, the fact that there are no used copies means that nobody's returning it means that either nobody bought it in the first place, which I don't think is the case, or everyone who bought it is hanging on to it. So, Donkey Kong, you're on my list. I'll get you eventually.
Good. Because the last music in that.
Valentine's Day.
The music in it is so good, and I was listening to some of the music Nintendo has posted on the new Donkey Kong website, and I guess they got the guy back who did the originals for Super NES to do the music.
Nice.
So it sounds like new, but it's got that Nintendo charm. Like, you just reminded of, oh, those Super NES games are so awesome. But it's on the Wii U, so you guys don't want to hear about that.
No, not even a little. Not even a little. So Ryan and I really appreciate your continued support of our show, along with the support of our sponsor, Doghouse Systems. You can use the code TheGamersIn to double your RAM when you purchase a new gaming rig. Head on over to DoghouseSystems.com and get your order on. Which brings us to our topic of the week. So we are actually going to talk a little bit about Sonic this week. So Ryan, why don't you give a rundown of this? Because I have to admit, I'm not a big Sonic person. And as I was kind of reading about this, it was very much like, oh, it was always Sonic versus Mario and Sonic, Sonic, Sonic. And Sonic was actually a Sega thing. So that was never my thing. I always had Nintendo. So Sonic, I mean, I remember vaguely playing once or twice, and I feel like it must have been at a friend's house. And I do remember the rings, like having to collect the rings. But that's it. So I'm not a Sonic person. So Ryan, why don't you talk about why this is a topic?
Yeah, it's a topic because not a lot happened this week. But also it's interesting because Sonic is, as we know, made by a Japanese developer, Sega Team. Or no, is it Sonic Team? Anyways, it's Sega. And it's never really been put in the hands of a Western developer. Someone argued that Sonic 3 was co-developed by an American developer, but either way, this is really interesting because they've taken this very Japanese property and gave it all to a Western developer. It's actually based, the new game called Sonic Boom is based on, yes, I know everybody in the chat room is probably going to start singing Sonic Boom. I promise I will not. Now I kind of want to, no
singing.
Right. Sonic Boom
every
is...
Every freaking week, Ryan. Every week. Stop it.
I got my singing in for the game night, so if you didn't tune in, you're going to have to scrub through that two-hour video. So Sonic Boom is going to be a cartoon aimed at, you know, smaller kids. And it's in a Western developer's hands, but also they're building a game. And this game features wildly different design characters than what we're used to seeing. So not only...
I'm just going to jump in right there where you say wildly different design, because, I mean, again, not a huge Sonic fan, but I looked at that and instantly I knew exactly who the characters were. Like, I remembered Sonic and Tails and Knuckles, and I didn't remember the chick, but, you know, like, I remembered the other three, and I was just like, yeah, that's what they look like. So, I mean, wildly different, I think, is if you're a Sonic fan, yes. But if you're someone like me, it's just like, no, that's Sonic. What's the problem? Other than apparently he has a scarf now. That's a big deal.
It's not wildly different. I mean, Sonic is definitely looks a little bit lankier, like taller. But that wasn't the issue. Like, not issue, but a lot of people see Knuckles and he looks different, which is fine, because I think Knuckles was always this character that was just a red Sonic, but he was different in the sense that he was, like, technically the strength character whenever he was portrayed as more than just a sprite. So it makes sense they've kind of bulked him up, and he kind of, like, he's probably going to be voiced by Adam Baldwin or something, and he's going to have a really deep gruff voice.
Yeah.
So that was one thing that kind of made people look, oh, this is weird. But the really exciting part is that this game is being developed by an American studio called, and I'm trying to find it, it's like Big Red Button or something.
Something like that. Yeah, that sounds familiar.
And, Big Red Button, they've never made a game yet, but it's actually ran by a guy who was a lead character designer or a designer on Uncharted and the Jak and Daxter games.
Oh, cool.
So both highly regarded series, and one thing we can say about the Sonic titles is that they haven't been too great ever. You know? They've always in my opinion, as a Nintendo fan, you know, back in the day when Sonic
look out.
When Sonic was at its peak. You know, it just never did it for me. It was cool. And then as they entered the 3D world, they didn't really, you know, grab onto it like Mario did. So they never really had that, this is a great Sonic game, you know, compared to when back in the day you were playing 1 and 2 and it was amazing. So it's really exciting to see Sega go, you know what? let's give this to a Western developer. Let's see what they can do. You know, you got the guys that were the minds behind Jack and Daxter and Uncharted, some of the bigger third-person action-adventure games. So when you give me that and you apply it to the Sonic characters, we cross your fingers, we could actually maybe get a good Sonic game.
I thought the trailer looked really interesting. I mean, again, like, everybody seemed to really be ripping on it, but it looked fine to me. It looked like a new take on an old title, and, you know, or an old franchise, I guess. Not necessarily, it's not a remake of any kind, but I thought it looked kind of cool. So, I mean, again, it's a Nintendo title, so it's going to be on the Wii U and the 3DS. So if I'm going to pick it up, it's going to be on the 3DS, not the Wii U, obviously, because Wii U, lame. Anyways.
You don't own a Wii U. Also lame. But I think, you know, it is a Nintendo exclusive. Sega's always done well on Nintendo platforms once they've moved away from their own platforms. So it makes sense to develop it.
It seems to be a very similar mindset, you know? Like, they, not that the Sega games are childish, but Sonic is definitely more in line with Mario than it is with, say, Uncharted is a perfect example. You know, Uncharted, Infamous, Killzone, like, all of these kind of first-party Sony titles. Like, Sony doesn't have a franchise that is something in line with Sonic and Mario, you know? Like, they're very cartoony and aimed at a PG audience. And, you know, like, every once in a while there's a nod to the adult audience. But, you know, it's very, very safe, I guess is a good word.
Yeah, I you know, I'd put it like along the lines of like how Pixar does things.
Yes, where it's that's what I'm saying. So like it's Pixar-esque in the video game world, whereas a lot of the other platforms in the PlayStation and Xbox world just don't really lend themselves to that audience. I mean, the Wii is definitely where they should be. So it'll be interesting to see how it does.
Yeah, but the reason when I had pitched this as a topic to Jocelyn, I had asked, are you a Sonic fan? And I kind of thought maybe you hadn't played a lot of Sonic titles. So that led me to ultimately the question that came to my mind when I first saw this, and it's what a lot of people have been asking is, you know, how do you feel about these hardcore Japanese created franchises going to Western developers? Because as we all know, Western, you know, North America and Europe are two of the biggest markets for video games. You know, Japan, while in the past was a big market, now doesn't even compare to North America and Europe. Do you feel as though, like, some strong Japanese franchises, I mean, we can mention some like Zelda or even Mario, would benefit from having a Western take?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is that, oh, crap, I totally had a thought, and now it's gone. Crap.
Well, while you're thinking about it, like, I can think of a Nintendo example. Like, Metroid was a franchise always made, you know, by Japanese developers, and then when they handed it off to Retro, which is a Texas-based developer, owned by Nintendo, but still all of the developers based in Texas, they built Metroid Prime, and it was great. It was an awesome, you know, sort of addition to the franchise. Mind you, Nintendo still kept a stranglehold on them to make sure that they still made it the way they wanted them to. But, you know, Nintendo's no stranger to doing this. Like, they did it with Luigi's Mansion and Next Level Games in Vancouver. Mm-hmm.
What I was going to say was something along the lines of, like, a lot of Western culture is, like, totally fanboying out about Japan. Sure. You know, whether that's like absolutely loving the video game world, like franchises like Mario and Zelda and all those things, or if it's like, you know, I mean, anime is huge here now, and I just find that, like, there's really these people in the tech type industry really gravitate towards Japan, Japanese culture, all of that, and fanboy out about it. I mean, really, with direction from the original content creator,
right?
I think that Western developers could do some really great things that would be well received over here. I think that sometimes the Japanese developers have kind of hit a wall because I don't feel like the fanboyness goes either way. I mean, in some cases it does, but
I feel like difference, you know?
Yeah, like, I feel like it's these franchises really benefit from people being like, "Oh my god, I totally grew up on Zelda and I love Zelda," and you know, like I have read all of this stuff and I know all of the lore, and now I work for, you know, insert video game developer company here. Mm-hmm. And with the guidance of a company like Nintendo, they could do really great things. And I think especially in the cases where these franchises are, you know, 20 and 25 years old now, it's been the same thing for so long that if nothing else, it's just a fresh set of eyes on an old idea. But it's not like those eyes are coming completely out of nowhere. You know, they're still familiar with everything and grew up with everything, but they can take, you know, everything they've always wanted out of a game and put that in, as opposed to the same iteration over and over and over.
Yeah. And I mean, another franchise that could really do with some fresh eyes, you know, Final Fantasy. I mean, yes. They've been burning their wheels on that freaking thing for years. I mean, if 7 out of the, I can't even say, I won't say 15, because there's probably been 20. I mean, Square Enix started cheating when they said X2, 13, 1, 2, 3. You know, it's like, now you're just trying to hide the fact that you've got 30 Final Fantasy games. You know, if the last one in your franchise, being 7, was the last great one that everybody references, you got a bit of a problem when your 20th one in the franchise isn't living up to it. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
it's like, if we just superscript some X's and some more I's, maybe no one will notice that actually we're on number 35.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to give developers a hard time, but it's like Final Fantasy could really do with
you don't want to say reboot, but no. Reimagining. Mm-hmm. In the same vein, you know, like, we don't have to get rid of any of the kind of lore or background or history of a franchise, but just getting a Western take on, because, I mean, that's where a lot of, I mean, I guess Mario isn't that deep. I mean, it's a couple of brothers going after a princess in a castle, but, you know, something like, you know, Zelda or a Final Fantasy is also a really good example that has a little bit more lore and background and story to it. Mm-hmm. Taking a reimagining of that in a Western kind of game environment, I think it can't be anything but good. Yeah. When you've had a whole bunch of stale titles.
Yeah, and I mean, I think some of my favorite Nintendo franchises are the ones that have made it out to the West and really done well, and I would love to see them do it more. I don't think it needs to happen with, you know, because Mario is such a basic game of running, jumping. It's more about the platforming than the story and the feel.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you'd want, like, a Mario with a scarf game, but Zelda is the one that just comes straight into my mind.
I know. Although, again, Link to the Past was very, very good.
but yeah, and I
or
guess...
Or not Link to the Past, Link Between Worlds. I keep getting those two mixed up.
I think a Link Between the Worlds... Or Link Between the Worlds... I always want to say the. I'm going down to the Walmart. I think the reason that game works so well is because it is a cartoony, simple, fun game, you know. Mm-hmm. Like the Mario titles, you know, there is some good story in there, but it's still very Japanese. And I'm just saying, I would love to see a Western take on The Legend of Zelda within the same, you know, storyline and lore and everything, but I'd love to see it Metroid primed, you know, given that, you know, darker, grittier Western feel. Give Link a scarf, whatever. I'm down with the scarf. If that's what it takes to get a Japanese developer to hand over the reins to a Western developer.
Scarves for all.
I will play Scarves the game, you know? Hell, there's a character named Scarves. Call him Scarves.
There you go. So I think that pretty much does it for us tonight. A reminder to everyone that if you want a super cool, awesome, sweet Gamers In t-shirt, you can head on over to slashloot.com. You can find all your favorite shows over there, from Zombies Ain't My Podcast to The Angry Chicken to Frog Pants shows like The Morning Stream and The Instance. Mm. Slashloot.com has got it all. So if you'd like to visit us on the web, you can do so at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on Amove TV, along with other fabulous podcasts, including Starcast, Campaign Roundtable, Biggest Fan, Amove Radio, and The Angry Chicken. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at GISGamer. Ryan is at R. Murphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/Jocelyn Moffat. You can also find us on Facebook and Google+. If you'd like to email the show and comment on anything that we've talked about tonight, you can do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com. So before we go, I just want to give a quick shout out and thank you to Greg Moffat for creating our music. You can find him on Twitter at SoundsInfluence. We would also like to thank Joel Duggan, who does all of our graphic work. You can find him and everything he does at joelduggan.com. So thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember, tune in next week.